This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Dr. William Hansen. Dr. Hansen's both an anesthesiologist, and he's also the Chief Medical Information Officer and Vice President at Penn Medicine. Penn Med is, of course, one of the great health systems in the country with great leadership. Dr. Hansen, can you take a moment to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your career?
Yes. So as you mentioned, I'm an anesthesiologist. I'm also an intensivist by background, and started working with computers actually in high school and continued in a break between college and medical school when I worked at our what was then called data processing shop at the Hospital University of Pennsylvania. So back here again in Philadelphia. And at that point, we were dealing with mainframes. The microcomputers that existed briefly weren't even around, and PCs were unheard of. They were to be developed several years later in the early 80s. So I worked during med school doing projects with hospital administrative computing, went on to do an internal medicine residency in Palo Alto right around the same time that Apple was being born then there, sorry. And then started off on a career in critical care and anesthesia, which is, as you know, very instrument-rich environments, both in the ICU and the OR. So I worked with data from those instruments in my early research career and subsequently went on to work with one of the telemedicine startups in tele-ICU care. And with time, that led to the role that I have currently as Chief Medical Information Officer for the health system.
And how did you sort of move from practicing anesthesiology into sort of information in that area? I know you had a lifelong interest in this area, but how did you sort of navigate that in at the system and so forth in your career?
Yeah, that's sort of an interesting story. I was recruited to come work with a startup, a company called ICUSA at the time. That was taking information from critical care bedsides and porting it into a central hub where there was an on-call intensivist and intensive care team providing oversight and backstop to the bedside crews. This company went on to become VisiQ and then was subsequently acquired by Philips. I didn't end up working for them, but at around the same time, took a sabbatical in the computer science department at Princeton University, and then went on to teach there for several years, a course on medical informatics. Our organization became interested in the product that company that I had elected not to work for was offering, and then asked me to take on a role as medical director as we implemented tele-ICU at Penn Medicine. So I did that for a period of time, and that was obviously working both in intensive care and medical informatics concurrently. And then that's what led to the role as Chief Medical Information Officer, because I had experience working with computer-based applications, starting with my role in the intensive care unit.
And when you look at sort of Chief Medical Information Officer today, what are the key issues that you're most focused on? What's the most interesting and what are you most focused on today?
Well, you won't be surprised to realize that the recent explosion in the work being done in generative AI, and we've been working with AI-like products that were not generative, they were machine learning for a number of years. And as the more recent generative AI capabilities became evident, we've been excited to identify where they're likely to be helpful with the problems we're facing today. And at the same time, been very attentive to the risks, both associated with the massive amounts of patient data that are necessary to make these things work. So risks to privacy of our patients, and also the risks associated with adopting something too eagerly, too early, and ending up with a flawed implementation of a product. So generative AI can help us with a number of capabilities, and we can talk more about that briefly. But it can also lead people down a problematic path. If you think about things like hallucinations or information that's skewed or incomplete or biased, we're very thoughtful about that. but I think it's an exciting new area. And once we're comfortable with the application in terms of its risks and its benefits, we expect to see that used in a number of areas to help our clinicians, our providers, our nursing staff, et cetera.
And when you look at the issues, the biggest challenges, what do you see as the biggest challenges today? I mean, there's so much going on in technology and healthcare. How do you sort of filter through what's useful, what's not useful? How do you think about those things?
Well, the key issue that we're facing organizationally, and I think this is true for a lot of organizations, is provider burnout. So the electronic medical record has brought great benefits with it, but it's also exposed providers to an increasing number of tasks that historically either didn't exist or were dealt with by administrative personnel. So, for example, documentation in the electronic medical record has gotten more complicated because the requirements of our payers for detailed justification for the work that's being done are in parallel with the basic job of an electronic or a provider document, which is communicate information to one's peers about the care one is providing. So you're both trying to provide information relevant to the care of the patient at the same time meet the coding requirements. So that's one area in which providers are feeling a sense of burnout. We've also opened the door to communicating directly with the patient through the portals that come with electronic medical records. So patients are encouraged to communicate with their care team about prescription refills, about appointments, about medical questions, et cetera. Some of those things can be handled without the intervention of the provider, but many of them require the provider. So something that previously might have been a phone call to an answering service that didn't need to be dealt with off hours, now there's this growing sea of communications from patients and also communications amongst the care team. So we have two different types of mailboxes, the mailbox for the patients and the mailbox for tasks or communications from within the patient care enterprise itself. So that's a huge area of new tasks for physicians. And then, we're seeing more patients in shorter periods of time than previously. And so, where one might previously have had an hour appointment for a new patient, now that might be a shorter period of time. So I think for our providers, they feel like they're working harder to stay in place. They're working more off hours. And this is all leading to the sense of burnout that we hear. And it's not really that the electronic medical records vendors or deployers are at fault. It's just it's opened up new channels and new tasks.
No, 100%. And Dr. Hansen, talk about sort of advice you'd give to emerging leaders. You've had a great physician career, administrative career, leadership career. What advice would you give to emerging leaders?
Well, this is going to sound a little trite to start with, but I definitely think that the concept of following the stuff that interests you, following your passion might be a little bit too strong, but if you wish to become a leader, you need to explore new opportunities from the base within which you're working. So in an academic medical center, there's a wide variety of activities relating to, say, research or quality and safety or administrative tasks that are open to people that are interested in enhancing their clinical career with additional activities. So I think I encourage trainees and young faculty to say yes to opportunities, to seek out opportunities. As somebody who is now stewarding folks who wish to become leaders, I'm very much interested in people that identify ways in which they can help me or my organization do its job well and have the right balance between solving problems. Problem solving is a critical career success factor, and doing it in a way that balances being too needy or requiring enough, too much help that, the benefit that you provide is outweighed by the the amount of attention that you need to do that. So people that manage to solve problems, largely working through obstacles on their own, but, you know, asking for help from leaders to help them navigate or open doors, I think, are sort of critical success factors. So early on, say yes a lot. And then ultimately, if you've said yes a lot, there will come a time in which you need to prune. So it's sort of like a bonsai tree. You need to prune the excess or the dead wood and, you know, refine your activities so that you are going not in all directions, but sort of in a direction that follows the areas that interest you as you evolve in your career.
Thank you. And it strikes me you've had a career that you've loved. Talk a bit about advice to other physicians about having a career that they could still love. And I think part of it you touched on, which is you need to follow your passion, do things you love doing. Any other thoughts for a young physician that you would tell somebody, you know, here's how you have a meaningful career and one that you're going to ultimately enjoy versus feeling burnt out and so forth?
Well, you know, young writers are told to write about what they know. So, you know, if you're interested, for example, in writing a fiction book and you're a physician, the advice might be write about medical fiction and, you know, write something in which you can provide some context. So I think, you know, for a young faculty member or a resident, that you come into the discipline with a body of knowledge. In my case, that happened to be I had worked with computers a lot during medical school and prior to that point. So that led me in a direction of working with computers and computer programs, which led me off in the direction that I find myself in now. People will come to me oftentimes and say, well, how do I end up being like you? And my answer is, you don't necessarily want to follow my path because it was very wandering. You might look back and say, this is a very, you know, straight line path, but it certainly wasn't. But, you know, work from a base that you understand. And if you have a passion about quality or about risk management, and you are in a certain medical discipline, you may focus on quality in dermatology if you're a dermatology resident or a young faculty member, and that will lead you maybe to broader areas of quality control and management within the health system. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I think that's what you're getting at.
No, I think it's great. I think the concept of wandering versus linear, so many careers take different spots, different areas to them. And part of it is doing the core thing you do and then being open to those different traverses and different paths. I think that's fantastic advice. And I think following the things that naturally interest you is fantastic. Dr. Hansen, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. What a remarkable career. I'll ask you one further question. You know, at the end of the day, what's a better academic institution, Yale or Harvard?
I'm going to go with Yale all the way.
There you go. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you.